we have always believed that education inequity is too complex and too big a problem to be solved alone. So the more and more organizations can join hands, the more and more stakeholders can join hands, the faster we can achieve the impact.
Hello and a warm welcome to a very special podcast series, Unusual Suspects. I'm your host, Gaurav Chaudhary. This is a series about unraveling stories of entrepreneurs, investors, professionals, and philanthropists who are disruptors, yet not in your face. Their disruptions have consistently delivered on the purpose and the mission they've embarked on. Their values are as strong as the mission. While they're ruthless in pursuing their ambition, they don't stray from being leaders who are not just admired for the vision and relentless pursuit, but also for how they're building an ecosystem of believers who consistently push the boundaries. In each episode, I speak to one such leader, talking to her or him or them about their businesses, lives, inspirations, interests, challenges, pivot moments and turning points, successes, failures, and of course, the little joys of life and work. It is as much about their personal life stories as about their entrepreneurial, professional, and philanthropic journeys. Unusual Suspects streams on earshot.in, spotify.com, Apple Podcasts, YT Music, moneycontrol.com, and a host of other podcast streaming platforms and directories. For this episode, I'm delighted to have Khushbu Awasthi, COO, Shiksha Lokam, and co-founder, Mantra for Change. Every day, Khushbu is steering the team to create programs and solutions that restore the agency of education leaders. Both organizations evangelize the approach of micro-improvements, which aims at bringing simple plus-one shifts to the current context by the education leaders themselves. This means they're able to drive contextual improvements. Focused on system leadership development, Shiksha Lokam and Mantra for Change co-create education change programs and solutions with national, state, and district public education departments, academic bodies, and nonprofits. Their work begins together, Sarkar, Samaj, and Bazaar actors to drive collective action for systemic education transformation. Welcome to Unusual Suspects, Khushbu. Delighted to have you on the show.
Thank you, Gaurav. Really looking forward to our conversation. It's a pleasure to be here.
Khushbu, Let's start off with a very basic, but nonetheless a fundamental question for my benefit, for my understanding, and also for the understanding of a leader, of our listeners. You know, for decades, the common problem or the consistent problem, the central long-run question that has been afflicting the Indian education sector is those of students of public schools, essentially government schools, is that students in these kind of schools have been denied access to quote-unquote quality education. Now, this in the process ends up limiting them and acts as a constraining factor because it limits their ability to learn and succeed and also becomes a constraining factor for fulfilling their aspirations and ambitions. And we have seen over the last several decades, there has been countless number of policies, programs, interventions, probably with the right intent. These have been designed and drafted by both governments, both at the center and the state. Despite all of these, the outcomes remain somewhat poor, and if I may say so, a little suboptimal. What it ends up doing is that it kind of perpetuates the cycle of poverty because, upward mobility, education remains the strongest vehicle for upward mobility. Now, if as someone who has been working towards trying to address this with your own set of very innovative solutions, help me understand the scale and the magnitude of this problem, Khushbu.
Sure, Gaurav. I'm glad you already kind of set the context of where education play. What is the role that the education plays in the whole shaping the life trajectory of a human being? When we speak of on the brighter side, right? India has one of the world's largest public education system. That means as a society, as our government, we have made this choice to invest in education as a lever for change. India has 1 million government schools. We have more than 265 million children attending schools. And a lot has shifted in the past, like from the time of the independence, if you see, right, like when we were as a society in a space where people didn't even consider schooling as the obvious choice when a child reaches that age, to today where education, the enrollment has been universalized, right? Like today, a parent, even in a village, doesn't even rethink whether he or she needs to send her children to school. But the sad reality is that our education process or the pedagogy inside the classroom has still remained in the pre-independence era, if I can say that, where it's still not very relevant to the everyday lives of our children, right? India is such a diverse country. I mean, you and I know that we are the only country in the world that has more than 20 official languages. And then there's so many dialects. There are festivals that one region celebrates and the other has no clue about. And in that kind of a situation, how do you even design a curriculum that every child would be able to relate to or every region would be able to relate to? How do you define the priorities in terms of what should be the focus of education for the children in Bihar versus in Kerala versus in Maharashtra? Right? So there's a lot of these contexts that plays an important role in deciding these things. And I think India as a country is kind of, we have to see it in its, the whole challenge has to be seen in its entire scale, in its complexity of the diversity that we have. And hence then move more and more towards decentralizing these decisions, making sure that the agency is given is actually restored at the most local level so that local leaders can come up with solutions, what is relevant to their context.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Khushbu, before I, ask you to share your personal journey and the inspiration behind that, but I just want, staying on this question itself, and particularly with the focus on education leaders, you know, there are an estimated about 4.5 million education leaders, and this include administrators, pedagogical coaches, school principals, and community leaders who have the responsibility of designing policies, programs, functions, and also overseeing and executing most of these. The whole purpose of that, the whole goal is to ensure effective student learning. The problem, however, is that, you know, despite all of this, we haven't yet achieved the results that we would have liked to, because, and this results in a massive inequity problem. My question is that, you know, a leader who is going to train the leaders? Because if a leader who isn't amply trained affects teachers, it affects students, and eventually it affects families. So whose responsibility? I know you were doing a lot of work there over the last 11 years, but eventually where does the buck stop to train the leaders?
I'm really glad that you asked this question, Gaurav. In our education system, sadly, leadership as a term or leader as a position has not been given that much importance. So if you see, 60% of those 1 million public schools are actually primary schools. Okay, that means they are from grade 1 to 5. And in those primary schools, a school principal is not even a role that is defined for them. Because most of these primary schools happen to be 2 or 3 teacher school. And so one of those senior teachers just start playing the role of a school leader, right? So leadership as a subject, as a position, has rarely been paid enough attention to. Like even for people like you and me, like when we, if we are not working in education system, typically when I say education or school, the personas that come to our mind is, oh, there's a child, which is a student, and then there's teacher. Because the majority of the transaction, the interactions are happening between these two personas. So the sad reality is that leadership has not been given enough weightage. But on the bright side, because of a lot of work that organizations like ours have been doing with the education system, and now the some of the dynamic bureaucrats and the officials who are working in Department of School Education across states and in the center, there's growing realization that, hey, we have to pay attention to leaders. I mean, if you can't imagine an organization running without a CEO or the leadership team, then why should it be any different for schools? So to answer your question, in terms of now that there is realization that yes, leadership is important and leadership is so much beyond everyday classroom interactions, then there has to be a separate thought out process of how do we enable learning opportunities for them. And then there are departments, institutions that are actually already there. There are, at a district level, there are DIETs. At a state level, there is SERT, the State Council for Education, Research and Training. At the central level, there's NCERT. So these are institutions that are primarily aimed at building the capacity of our education leaders. So if the government actors and civil society actors like ours, we are able to join hands, bring the best practices from across the globe, we can really kind of accelerate this learning journey for all our school leaders. And also then it has to be done in the context of the leaders, right? Like our school leaders are still sitting in the school, in those villages, in those remote districts. And hence it's widely impossible to even assume that, oh, we will be conducting certain training programs and these leaders would be able to come and attend that in person, because ultimately they're leaders. They have everyday operational responsibilities. So in the design of those entire journey, the learning journey for our leaders, are we able to keep the persona at the center and hence design something which is suitable for them, which they can consume at the comfort of, in the comfort of their school premises whenever they find time? So how do we build these continuous learning, on-the-job learning opportunities for them is going to be game-changing.
Absolutely. You know, Khushbu, take us through your journey, particularly in the context of the work that you're doing. And what was the inspiration behind this for the work that you are currently doing? And you have co-founded these two organizations, Shiksha Lokam and Mantra for Change. I'm sure you would have come across a lot of unforeseen constraints and challenges and barriers. How did you go about dismantling them, overcoming them? And you know, how has been the journey so far? So what was the inspiration behind all of this, Khushbu?
Gaurav, I've always believed that personal journeys always define, or in many cases at least, define the professional choices. And I'm a very good example of that. I was born into a patriarchal family in Bihar. And I'm sure people in India would know that, you know, usually in these societies, boundaries for girls are drawn as soon as they are born, right? Like I was always told what I can do, what I can't do, where I can go, where I can't go. On top of that, I think I was, I was growing up in Bihar in the 90s when, you know, the socio-political environment was not so conducive, you know, to say the least. So obviously the limitations became far more rigid. But I think I was fortunate, and I thank my stars that I was born to, I think, one of the most courageous women as my mother. She made sure that despite all the externalities, the situations, I got the best possible education in my school years. While all my cousins, my friends, they were getting married, my mother made sure that I could pursue my higher studies in engineering. She made sure I got out of the state. I could explore the world. I could see the world from my own eyes. I could develop my own perspectives. And I think, you know, it may sound simple now, but I know for a fact that for many of us, especially girls, the journey to these milestones in terms of my higher studies, job, or making choices to leave that job and start something on your own, these are filled with roadblocks. And as I reflect, I think it's very, very evident that the courage, the agency that I have, that I can make my own decisions, that I can make my own life choices, is because of the education I got. So I think that was the primary inspiration that back in 2009, when my friend Santosh and I were, you know, getting restless as young professionals on how do we contribute better? How do we put our lives to a better purpose? I think education became that obvious choice that we have to work in education. And that's why we set up Mantra for Change together with a singular vision that how do we enable enriching learning experiences for millions of our children who are going to public schools in the country, and enable that journey of that life of agency and, you know, responsibility for them. And so that was kind of the starting point when we set up Mantra. And then in the process, as we kind of, you know, immersed ourselves on the field, we started understanding the public education system landscape. as we understood what impact looks like, what are the challenges, what's the scale of the problem, like you asked. As we learned from, you know, professors, from our mentors, it became more and more evident to us that sustainable change in such a large system is only possible when every actor in the education system assumes that responsibility and demonstrates agency to improve things in their own locus of control, right? Imagine if, I mean, and this is something that I always tell my team, that imagine if every school leader across these 1 million public schools in the country can lead just one micro improvement every month, okay? Our education system will see over 10 million micro improvements every year. Now, wouldn't that be fascinating? Wouldn't that be such a powerful example of how systemic change can happen? So I think leadership, that's why our belief in leadership, that leadership is the only lever for driving systemic change, became more and more deep-founded, more and more deep-seated in our organization, in the way we design programs. And that has remained the focus. And with every new program that we shape, I think we have discovered new ways of instilling or restoring that leadership, because each of us have that, but it just needs to be refined and sharpened. Gaurav, I think you also asked about the challenges that we face.
Yes, yes, yes.
So in terms of challenges, I think both these organizations, Mantra for Change and Siksha Lokam, they got started at different stages and phases of my life. So obviously the challenges were very different, but maybe let me call out a couple of challenges from my initial days of Mantra and then from Siksha Lokam. When Santosh and I started Mantra for Change, we were very new to the education domain. We didn't have a big professional network. We had no brand identity. So first and the most obvious challenge was funds. You know, why would somebody invest in Mantra as an organization when they don't even know the people and what are we trying to do? So we had to bootstrap Mantra with whatever little savings we had. There was no external capital available. I remember for the first 2 years of Mantra, I had to continue working on my another full-time job because we had to cover our org expenses as well as pay salary to our early team members, right? I think building the team was another interesting challenge. When you have a new organization with no funding visibility, why should somebody join you? I remember when Azim Premji University is here in Bangalore and we went for the first campus placement. This was way back in 2014. And no student sat through the placement process. And that was like, oh, I don't know, it was a very good, very disappointing at that point in time. But now it's a very good lesson for us that just because you have passion, just because you believe in something doesn't mean that other people will start believing in it automatically. So you have to be persistent. You have to keep at it. You have to keep engaging people in the journey. And we did that. And I think that's how it worked out. You know, one person joined and word of mouth from their friends, from professors, the people in the sector they realize how purposeful work we are doing at Mantra. And then, you know, it became very visible that, Mantra is able to work towards our purpose and it can create that platform where more and more individuals can contribute towards shaping the education landscape of the country. So I think building the team was the second most important challenge. I think one challenge that has persisted in different shapes, right, is building the trust with the stakeholders. So for example, in early days of Mantra, we were working on school improvement programs where we used to approach these schools individually. Now, why would a school principal or a school teacher even allow us inside the school? We are just like two engineers with no education degree, telling them that, hey, we can really work with you and can help transform the school. And they're like, okay, what is the product that you have? And we're like, no, we don't have a product. We are here to work with you to improve the school. So trust building in the initial days was definitely difficult. But our realization was that people can sense intent. And again, if we can keep showing up with authenticity, with and we can show that, hey, we have learnability, we are able to co-create with you, we have this patience to sit and really understand your challenges and then come up with solution, people start trusting. And this I'm calling out here because in the early days, it was with schools. But then when we started working with the Department of School Education across states, with every institution, with every education officials, the journey of trust building has remained. There's just no shortcut to it. You may have now, we may have credibility in terms of, oh, we have 11 years of experience, we have done this, that helps. But still, there's a person at the other side of the table who needs to believe in you at a more personal level. So that has been very interesting challenge. And every time we face it with a new stakeholder, it's fun and very, very interesting on how we can draw up lessons from our past experiences and then kind of build a trust. In terms of Siksha Lokam Gaurav, if I can just add, call out one very unique challenge that we face. And I love that in your introduction, you called out, in fact, some of the very unique aspects of our work in terms of how, when from the very beginning, from the inception of Siksha Lokam, we said, hey, impact at scale is possible. So don't see it as like two extremes on a spectrum where only one is possible and the other is not. We said systems change is not about radical boat shaking reforms. System change can happen if we catalyze these continuous plus one changes, the micro improvements, right? We cannot solve this problem alone. We have to join hands. We said technology as a shared resource can be game changing. We said NGOs and government need to work together and that resources, including data, need to be shared openly. There's nothing about their copyright or IPs that we should be talking about, right? But easier said than done. I think all of us in the ecosystem, we have our own lived experiences. So this was very interesting because Siksha Lokam started as a Shribulal family philanthropic initiative. So there was a big name behind it. So in terms of credibility, it was huge, right? But still, in the beginning days, because we were trying to completely project a new way of doing things, there was a lot of cynicism in the ecosystem. But then, as it always happens, you find your early partners, your early believers, and then when you work with them, build the trust, and you show the evidence of what worked and how beautifully it worked, more and more people start becoming your evangelizers and they start joining the way of working, so to say.
Yeah, and absolutely. Very well articulated about the challenges and how we have overcome those. If I may ask you, how do you go about measuring the impact your programs and your solutions have brought about, particularly in the Indian public education system? And if you could just elaborate a little bit on the how, particularly in the context of training teachers and principals who are directly involved with the children. How do you go about measuring the outcome? And related to that, of course, is that how do you actually see go about measuring what are the kind of skills that need the significant amount of, uplift and training?
Right. So in terms of our impact, Gaurav, it's very much, we define it around our key design principles, right? Like I've already spoken about how our work completely focuses on actually three key design principles. One, that leadership is key. So how might we restore the agency of the actors in the system to lead these micro improvements? Second is that we work with the government. So if we aim to lead impact at scale, partnering with government cannot be an afterthought. So how are we able to institutionalize certain approaches, certain way of working in the government program, in the government budget is something that is definitely an indicator of impact for us. And third is our whole approach of collective action. And we have always believed that education inequity is too complex and too big a problem to be solved alone. So the more and more organizations can join hands, the more and more stakeholders can join hands, the faster we can achieve the impact. So one of the aspects of our impact, how we measure, is in terms of how fast and how broadly our ecosystem has grown, right? So in terms of our impact, Gaurav, if I have to like categorize this, maybe I'll do that in three buckets. One, access. So we are co-builders to Deeksha, which is the national education platform by Ministry of Education, Government of India. Now, as a shared digital infrastructure, Deeksha is improving access to knowledge to our leaders and our teachers in the education system. The whole micro-improvement capability on Diksha is also bringing observability to how and in what aspects are our public schools improving. Today, if you go on the dashboard, which is hosted by Ministry of Education, you can see, anybody can see that there are more than 8 lakhs micro-improvements that are being led by our school leaders and teachers. And you can actually go dig deeper and see which categories are these micro improvements in. Are they improving infrastructural aspects? Are they improving classroom pedagogy? Are they improving community participation? So what I take pride in is that data and reliable data is actually helping create this narrative that public schools are improving, right? And this also then helps with the perception that our parents and communities have about public schools. I think second, in terms of the student learning outcomes, which is definitely the North Star for anybody working in education system, we are always working towards institutionalizing the approach, the whole micro-improvement approach towards leadership development and program design. And one of the key impact that we have seen is that how it has been institutionalized at both the federal level and as well as across several states. Today, for example, Bihar is using the whole micro-improvement approach to implement project-based learning across 30,000 middle schools, that is grade 6 to 8, reaching about 60 lakh children. Now, there are third-party assessments that are being done, which have shown that learning outcomes are improving not only on science competencies, but also on life skills for these children. Punjab has been showing continuous improvement in student outcomes since 2021 now. Student enrollment in Punjab to government schools have actually improved. There are similar stories from states like Haryana, Nagaland, Andhra Pradesh, who have been leveraging this, the micro-improvement approach, to designing their own change programs based on their own priorities. Thus, I think, we have contributed to helping the system see better because of the data and the technology. They are able to solve better because they have better access to information, to the repository of these micro improvements, and to be able to sustain the change better, because the leaders are actually in the system. And we are saying that the moment they start seeing success of their own micro improvement, it starts becoming a habit. I want to solve more things every day, right? In terms of our ecosystem building effort, Gaurav, which I spoke about in the conversation around collective action, is that since 2017, we have actively engaged and built an ecosystem of over 50 civil society organizations. These are organizations across different states in the country, in fact, 20 different states in the country. And they are the organizations who are aligned on the design principles, who believe in sharing, in exchange of knowledge. And we have been able to show that collective impact is possible. In fact, because of our work with the Punjab Education Collective, we won the very prestigious Shaw Foundation Award for Collective Social Innovation in 2023 at the World Economic Forum, which was really, really amazing for the team and for the mission. Because when you get recognized at the global forum, it also says that, hey, you're really doing something right and moving in the right direction. So I think with respect to this whole collectivization and collective impact, we have been able to successfully create these opportunities for better visibility and recognition of these success stories on a national stage, where a national institution like NCERT is recognizing different states' effort on how they have done things beautifully, how their programs have been more effective. They are recognizing civil society organizations on how they have played an important role in successful implementation of the programs. So I think these three key lenses we always keep in terms of when we define our impact for our work at Mantra and Siksha Lokam.
Now, coming to your latest initiative, and which is also a people's movement, is Shiksha Graha. What is it that you do under this, and what is the kind of change that you envision to bring about in the public education system through this movement, through this initiative, Shiksha Graha? Khushbu?
So, Gaurav, just now when you asked me about the impact and I shared how wonderful our impact has been, right? And I'm sure when you talk to any of the civil society organization working in education, each one of us have our own impact stories. And yet at a very meta level, at a country level, when we look at certain data points, certain statistics, the picture still doesn't add up. We still have, and this is government data that I'm quoting, we still have around 38 lakh children dropping out of our education system every year. ASSAR reports year after year have shown that learning outcomes across many states are still very, very poor. So I think for us as an organization, as a mission, when we were reflecting on our own journey of last 11 years, we said, while so much has been achieved, so much is yet to be achieved. And how can we fast pace it? Because children in the school today are going to grow up and they're going to be out of the education system. So we don't have like a lifetime to solve this problem. So, and that was the whole motivation behind shaping something like Sikshagra, which is designed like a social movement, which is designed on the principles of a social movement. And the whole idea is that while we are talking about collective action, there are only certain kinds of partners who are working with us. Who are those other actors? Who are those other unusual allies that are still sitting on the periphery, but they care about the problem? How do we get them into this whole movement together? And that's why when we are talking about Sikshagra, the whole imagination is that this will bring definitely the government across federal level, state level, district level, these actors together. It will definitely bring the civil society organizations, the NGOs like ourselves who are working in education to come together, join hands and shape programs with the government. But then it will also have the self-help groups, the women groups that are present to the last mile, which are present in the villages. What is the role that these self-help group and the women in, as part of these communities can play in improving the quality of public education as well as creating the demand for public education? What is the role that a college-going youth can play in creating a demand and in helping improve the quality of public education? So we are now even, you know, the whole thinking, because of this new shift, we are able to now think who are those other actors who are maybe present in the network but are not activated. So now we are now working with the NSS, the National Service Scheme, as an institution to say, how can your 10 million youth contribute towards education equity? We are working with self-help groups in Bihar and going forward now in Andhra, where we are saying, as a woman, can you hold Siksha Chaupals, very, very local level, these meetings where every woman in the village can take this pledge that I won't let my girl or my daughter-in-law drop out of school education system before they complete class 12th. The Sikshagra as a movement is, in that sense, we are anticipating, and that is what we are designing it for, that it will enable this complete decentralization of decision making. It will enable that problem solving at the most local level. So in fact, some of the very, you know, in terms of specific framework, we have come up with something called local problems, local solution. So the whole idea being decentralization. How do we create this nested tiers of decision making, enable districts to do what they can do best, enable a panchayat level person to do what they can do best? How do we, obviously leaders at every level, how do we enable principals, teachers, the local community groups to take charge, think together, and then identify a problem that they want to solve? So the whole idea of micro improvements, like diverse micro improvements will start bubbling up, is our imagination from Sikshagra. Then the diverse stakeholders, along with NGOs, these community-based organizations, these individuals, even media, what is the role that media has to play in terms of making public education even a subject of interest for the community in India? All of us, it's taxpayers' money that is going to make this public education system run. And yet people like you and I don't even consider public schools as the first choice when we think of which school to send our children to. Right. So these are some of the very clear goals and some of the imagination of how Sikshagra would be able to accelerate our journey towards education equity together as a country.
Absolutely. Finally, Khushbu, you know, looking ahead, just let's crystal gaze into the future a bit. What are your hopes? And you've been a practitioner in this space with a fair degree of expertise and also experience. What are your hopes and goals for the future of education leadership in India? Because I have a personal view in this, that unless there's a labor market mystery and a peculiarity in India, the primary school teacher particularly in the public education system, cannot be the least paid if you want to create a human resource which can compete globally. However, in India, that seems to be the case, which is not the case, for instance, in a country like Korea. So how do you incentivize that? And what is the role for, what do you see, how do you see the future of education leadership evolving in India? Because unless the education leadership changes, not much will change regardless of whatever focus policy or programs we might design from different governments and authorities. And where do you see this going, Khushbu?
It's interesting that you bring this point up, Gaurav. It's a common perception that teachers in the government schools are not being paid properly. But in fact, after the last revision, after the seventh pay commission, a government school teacher is actually making more money than a software engineer at a fresher level. So it's not so much about salary, but yes, the point that you bring out is very, very pertinent, that today maybe teaching is not seen, or the roles in the school system are not being seen as very aspirational or very prestigious in the community. Like when you ask a child or a parent, they would want their child to become a doctor or an engineer or a lawyer, but rarely people say, I want my child to become a teacher or a school principal. So yes, this whole perception about the prestige of the role has to be reestablished. And that is definitely something that we have to work towards. And that's why in Sikshagra, one of the core focus we have kept towards advocacy, that we have to talk about it. We have to make the role aspirational again. And also, people have to see public school as a place of action and a place where magic can happen. So definitely that is one aim and one hope. Second, I think in terms of my own personal hopes with respect to education leadership and Sikshagra is, in terms of outcomes, impact, right? I really hope one very clear goal that I see in my mind is that every child who gets enrolled in grade 1 today actually completes class 12th. And that would only happen when they are enjoying the learning process, when they are able to convey that excitement and the joy to their parents, where they say that, yes, education is relevant. What I'm learning in the classroom is relevant to my everyday life. And I'm very, very confident that this is going to add beautifully to my life trajectory, which today sadly has been missing. So zero dropout is definitely one goal. Better learning outcomes that should be visible on these national achievement surveys or the assers of the future. I mean, children, it should be very, very visible that children are learning and they're enjoying that learning processes. And in terms of leadership in particular, Gaurav, because we started our conversation on how important the topic of leadership is, I really hope that the education leadership narrative is so firmly established and institutionalized in our education system that there is substantial budget that gets allocated towards developing the leadership for our education system. There are unique programs, best of world, best of class programs that are getting designed by the government in partnership with education focused NGOs on improving the capacity of our school leaders. And third, like you said, I really hope that education related roles become that point of prestige for our society, where a child even aspires to become a teacher and a school leader in their education system. So, and that is something that we are very hopeful that it's possible and it can be achieved. And it's something that should be achieved if India as a country has to thrive. And as per our role goes, I think we see ourselves as co-builders and contributors to this larger change process that has already begun. And let's hope that we are able to build this thriving network for Sikshagra that will work together, that will join hands, and will really enable this leadership in the country for education system that will achieve change at scale, with speed, and in a sustainable fashion. So only onward and forward and no looking backward.
Indeed, absolutely. Only onward and forward. Thank you so much, Khushbu, for taking the time out and dropping by to have this conversation and sharing your deep insights and perspective on a range of issues on pedagogical quality, on the need for training of education leadership, and how collective effort in micro improvements involving the civil society, the government, and the teaching community can lead to significantly better outcomes in India's public education ecosystem. Thank you so much, Khushbu, for doing this with us.
Thank you, Gaurav. It was an absolute pleasure to interact. Thank you.